Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. What you're about to hear is a recording that I did on 25th of January 2020. And the photos that you see are photos that I took of Ronnie Kasrils. Who is Ronnie Kasrils? Ronnie Kasrils is one of the top Jewish communists in the time of the war between the blacks and the whites. This guy was a very senior member of the South African Communist Party. This is your classic Jewish communist, actually. This is exactly the kind of person that Adolf Hitler and the Nazis fought against, Jewish communism, or as they called it, Jewish Bolshevism. In fact, in the days when I had my Jewish friend, I actually raised the issue of Ronnie Kasrils, this very guy, whom you see the photo of, which I took on the 25th of January, I actually raised the issue of this guy, is this guy a Jewish communist? There was a time, about 10 or so years ago, when I spoke to my Jewish friend one day, and I said to him, you know, didn't Adolf Hitler say something about Jews and communism? Jews being communists or involved in communism? And my Jewish friend went to great lengths over the next week to tell me that Ronnie Kasrils is not Jewish. However, as you will discover in my recordings of the 25th of January, you will hear out of the mouth of Ronnie Kasrils himself, as well as the Jews who were present at the meeting, you will hear them all talking about being Jews and Jewish. Yet my friend had gone to great lengths to tell me, no, Ronnie Kasrils, no, he's not Jewish. No, he's not Jewish. And his reasoning, I'll get back to the story, but his reasoning is, well, you see, he's an atheist, therefore he cannot be a Jew. And that is the line he took back then. But he's a Jew. His parents are Jewish. His grandparents are Jewish. He grew up in a Jewish community. He identifies with Jews. He's got family in Israel. And there he is, welcomed by the Jewish community. And they're all talking about we Jews. And they're also talking about we whites. So just a bit of background about this recording. The day before this, on the 24th of January, one of my very loyal supporters, a lady, sent me a message late in the evening. It was a Friday evening. She said to me, Jan, tomorrow Ronnie Kasrils is going to be at a book launch, and it's very close to where you live, and you can go there, and I'll give you the address. And I said, yeah, sure. And the more I began to think about it, the more I began to think this might be a really good idea. And I went there, and when I was there, I asked the person hosting this talk, I asked if I could take photos. And I was told, yes, you can go ahead. So I took photos, and I recorded the entire talk. And I got a chance to ask Ronnie Kasrils a question. This is actually the second time in my life that I've had a chance to talk to this Jewish communist. The last time was sometime in the period 1993 to 1995. He doesn't know about the time that I spoke to him before. But I can show you some of the stuff that I got as a direct result of my discussion with him. And One of the things that I got as a result of my discussion with him was his book, Armed and Dangerous, which had just come out, and he was boasting about it. But he also told me where to get other communist literature, which is what I was really after at the time. I must have had a 20-minute discussion with him back then. I phoned up the Communist Party headquarters in Johannesburg, and I said to them, listen, I'm a budding communist. I'm very, very interested in communism. I want to learn as much as I can about communism. The reason I said that was because I was looking for communist literature. I had heard that the communists, the South African Communist Party, has got a journal. And the journal is called The African Communist. And I wanted to get my hands on that journal. Because in the Communist Party journal, I wanted to see what these scum-sucking pigs have in store for us whites in South Africa. So one day I hit on the idea, let me phone the Communist Party, and back then we didn't have cell phones, we just had landlines. Let me phone the Communist Party and see if I can find out how do I subscribe to or get copies of The African Communist. Well, to my utter amazement, when I phoned them, they said, yeah, we'll put you through to someone. And they put me straight through to Ronnie Casrils. He and I had a 20-minute discussion. I kid you not. The two of us had a long 20-minute discussion. And I was saying to him, I'm so interested in communism. Where can I get literature? And he said to me, well, what you do is you go into Johannesburg and you go there, and in there at on that street corner, you'll find that little shop and you'll find all our literature there. And I went there, and in that little shop, it was filled with communist literature from all over the world. I'd never known that there were so many communist publications in the world. My jaw just about hit the floor. There was communist magazines and journals from all across the world, Europe, you name it. And it is there that I went and I got copies of The African Communist. And I managed to get a couple of copies over a period of time, because I wanted to read what have these people got in store for us. And I still have those very journals that I got back then. I still have them in my possession. But anyway, here was a chance to talk to him face to face. And I went with my friend and we listened to his talk and the question and answer session about his latest book, his third book. And I was looking for an opportunity to try and ask him a question. And they didn't have much of a question and answer session, but I managed to get the first real question in. And I'd thought hard about how I'm going to phrase this thing in the hope that I can get as much information out of him as possible. And I gave him a story. And he actually went on and he started talking quite a lot. And he actually said a whole bunch of interesting things, really interesting stuff. And I did my utmost to be friendly and to try to encourage him more and to see if I could possibly get in a second question. But somebody else came and asked another question and then they cut the rest of it short. But I did get quite a good chunk of time where he spoke and he answered my question. Just a note, in this particular video, you're not going to get the question and answer session. That's not in this video. What you're going to hear is stuff from just his general chat during the book launch. In this piece of audio that you're about to hear from Ronnie Casrils, he discusses and reads a portion of his book, which is, I think, Catching Tadpoles. And this is supposed to be about his younger life. And now in here, he justifies why he became a communist. And he actually gives two reasons why he became a communist and why he started fighting against the apartheid system. So why does a white Jewish boy go and fight against the whites? Well, in this piece, he says that the first great turning point in his life was living in Johannesburg, and his mom takes him off to the movies, and he witnesses white guys beating up a smartly dressed black man. Now, all I can tell you is that maybe his story is probably true. I have heard similar types of things from my mother about my father in the time that they lived in South Africa before they went to Rhodesia. And my mother described an instance where my father beat up a black guy who was walking past the house, and he said something to my oldest sister, and it wasn't even anything particularly bad. My dad went out and grabbed the black guy and beat the hell out of him. And my dad wasn't even a big guy. He was quite a small guy, but a strong guy. So anyway, the whites used to put the blacks in their place quickly and in a determined way. In Rhodesia, it wasn't quite like this, but whites in Africa knew how to dominate the blacks and put them in their place. Whites made sure that they were the master. Now, here is the Jew, and he says that, well, this is all wrong, and he cites these, what he calls, white hooligans. What you got to remember as well is a lot of white men used to do a lot of blue-collar work, and they were physically strong, and they were capable of grabbing these blacks and just beating them up. And as you'll hear from him, the whites are saying, well, this black shouldn't have walked on the pavement. He should have got out of the way of the whites. You see, when the white men were dominant, they didn't take shit from anyone. They were absolutely dominant. This is their territory. You respect them. And as far as they were concerned, Johannesburg is a white man's city. It's not a black man's city. Blacks didn't create these cities that exist here. The whites created them. So that is how the whites felt about things in those days. So anyway, he looks at this and he says, oh, this is terrible and these nasty white people. And then you'll hear him rolling on straight into the Holocaust narrative. And then it's all about the Jews and the Holocaust. And finally, he asks his mom, and he says to his mom, well, mom, you know, what happens, you know, with this kind of stuff? Is this the same as happened to the Jews in Europe? And so the next thing you hear is his mother says, well, this is how it starts. It starts like this. And if it doesn't get stopped, then, you know, it ends up in the Holocaust and the gas chambers and blah, blah, blah. Now, those of you who've studied the whole Holocaust thing like I have, and you know that all the gas chamber stories are junk and that this is all overblown nonsense, and the Jews have been expelled on a minimum of 109 occasions in Europe and maybe even as many as 1,000 occasions, we know the reasons why they were expelled. So whites and Jews have clashed before. And the bottom line here is that he's looking at the blacks and he's now saying, well, that which happens to the blacks will happen to the Jews. That it starts like this and eventually it's going to be the Jews that are going to be treated like this. And I think this is where this whole Jewish-black thing comes from, is that these Jews from early on saw the blacks as potential allies against the whites. And this is a topic that I'm going to come back to, because we're going to still see what the Jews say about a communist terrorist like Nelson Mandela. We're going to hear it out of his mouth in another video. But this is just to give you an idea of how these Jews equate apartheid South Africa with Europe. And they see the behavior of the whites as being the same. And they know that their turn is coming. These Jews know that the whites are going to get to a point where the whites are going to start sorting out other people. And they see themselves as being in a similar position to the blacks, or in a position where they and the blacks should work against the whites. That is how these people think. And this kind of stuff is being applied in America, it's being applied in Europe. That is why these Jews are pulling in all these non-whites, is because, in my view, these Jews know that the whites of America, the whites of Canada, Australia, New Zealand, will eventually behave just like the whites of Europe. That eventually the time will come that white men are going to kick the Jews' asses because of all the nonsense that the Jews have been up to. And that is what this thing is about. So while these Jews are busy preaching, oh, diversity and all of us must stick together and blah, 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 the truth of the matter is that deep down in their hearts and souls, they are really more concerned about race war, racial conflict, and they know the white man is going to be the strongest of the lot. And that's why they're gathering all these others together so that they can take on the white man. Because they themselves are cowards and they aren't going to be able to take on the whites. The whites are going to outnumber them. And that's why these Jews are dreaming wet dreams of all these non-whites available in the hundreds of millions and maybe billions whom they can turn against the whites. But this will give you some insight. You can listen to what he says and then you can think about what I've told you. But here it is out of the mouth of a Jew. And by the way, as I've mentioned, my Jewish friend had gone to tremendous lengths to tell me that Ronnie Kasrils is not a Jew because he's an atheist. Well, here out of the mouth of Ronnie Kasrils, you'll hear him talking about Judaism. He probably is an atheist, but you can listen to him talking about Judaism, the values of Judaism, how Judaism and Christianity and Islam have got similar values, by the way, which shouldn't surprise you because Christianity and Islam are offshoots of Judaism. But he goes on and on about we Jews and everything. So, you know, there is Kasrils, the apparent non-Jew, and yet right out of his own mouth comes stuff like we Jews and, you know, there you go. There you go. So goes to show my Jewish friend had been lying to me, but I'd known he'd been lying to me a long time ago already. I knew that the whole story of, oh, Jews are just a religion, that's nonsense, because here you can see we Jews and they're all talking about them sticking together and all that kind of stuff. He's very well accepted into the Jewish community. These other Jews don't have a problem with him. But anyway, the bottom line here is that these Jews in South Africa saw the whites of South Africa and the way the whites were dominating the blacks, and they immediately realized, you know, that they themselves could end up in that situation. And notice also his mother's advice where she says, if this isn't stopped, it ends up in the gas chambers. So, which we know is junk. That whole gas chamber story is a load of rubbish. But the bottom line is that whites have kicked Jews' asses out of places in Europe. And if you've really looked at it, you'll understand not only why the whites did it, but that the whites were absolutely justified in doing it. The whites did not just kick the Jews out for no reason at all. In each case, the Jews had been up to all kinds of nasty, nefarious business, and the whites eventually got sick of it. And that's why they kicked their asses out. But these Jews now try to make out as if, oh, you know, these whites and racism. And from their viewpoint, it's the white that's the problem. And it's even more problematic for them when whites are sticking together. Racism is just the Jewish way of attacking white unity. We should actually be striving for the utmost racism, because racism is when we stick together. But they've managed to take the term white unity and flip it on its head and tell you that, you know, white unity is an evil thing, racism. And racism, as you will discover, is something that only white people can be guilty of. Only whites can be guilty of racism. And Jews themselves have said it. And recently in New York, Jews even said that only whites can be anti-Semitic. So when blacks were stabbing and attacking Jews in New York, the Jews said, no, no, blacks can't be anti-Semitic. Only whites can be anti-Semitic. Ultimately, this is a battle between whites and Jews. And the goal of the Jew is to get the non-whites onto the Jewish side. So listen to Ronnie Kasrils, and you'll hear his justification of the reason why the first turning point in his life that now started the process that led to him becoming a violent communist working for the downfall of the whites of South Africa. The second incident that he describes is the Sharpeville Massacre, which I'm not going to go into here. The Sharpeville Massacre is itself something that has been taken out of context, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that they've ignored and not shown you about the Sharpeville Massacre and that kind of thing. So these are the reasons why he apparently then felt justified to turn against the whites. And in his discussion, he even said that hundreds of people turned against the apartheid system. And of those hundreds of people, that he doesn't mention that here, but when you listen to the full discussion, you'll hear him mention that. But in the full discussion, when he talks about the hundreds, the big question you need to ask yourself is, of the hundreds of whites who turned against apartheid, how many of those hundreds were Jews? And I will bet you that 90 to 95% of the, quotes, hundreds of whites who turned against apartheid, that 90 to 95% of them were Jews. And if you go and you actually look at the history of South Africa, the supporters of the ANC, the people who assisted Mandela, etc., you'll just find Jew after Jew after Jew after Jew. You'll find the odd Englishman, the very odd Afrikaans person, but the vast majority were Jews. So Jews know racial conflict will exist. And they pretend it doesn't exist, but they know it exists and they're already preparing for it against whites. That is how these people think. And they know from European experience that all white people, not just the Germans, that all white people will eventually kick their asses. They know it because they've been kicked out of every corner of Europe, literally. So they know that there's going to be a conflict between whites and Jews, and they're already thinking ahead. That's what the real game is. So listen to him discussing the first great turning point of his life. And also just a note that there was motor car noise in the background, so I did noise reduction to make his voice clearer. So it's got a bit of a tin sound to it, but it's nice and clear. You can at least hear clearly the words that he's saying. So here it comes.
To not see people in stereotypical ways. And I had friends also coming out of a Jewish community, which can be very enclosed. I started breaking away from that, which is where the anti-Zionism comes in. Because if I can say this, in the lessons I learned from my mother, the turning points of my life from her seeing a black man being beaten in Joburg. I might read that. That's what I might read. And my mother said to me that our Jewish religion teaches us to respect everybody, Ronald. And you must be kind, you must respect people, and you must treat others as you would wish them to treat you. That's Judaism. That's us Jews. And absolutely, yeah. But you see, when you then expand your universe, I start discovering that actually the Christians believe that. And then the Muslims believe that. And that way of looking really helped me. So I'm not saying that I've got family members, including here, who've remained devout, remain in the community, and hardly have friends outside. And they socialize within the community. You know, I'm one of these who they would say, you know, this is cosmopolitan, you leave your tribe. Zuma has that attitude. He'd say to, I got friendly with him, you know, Ronnie, I don't understand. You never married a Jewish woman. You should have married a Jewish woman. I married a young Irish woman, a bohemian, and that was just a crazy marriage which ended in a divorce. Then I married a woman who was Scots Presbyterian, but likely atheist, growing up in Durban. And it's all here and in the various memoirs. And that was a 48-year marriage. So I'm not a philanderer. You know, I had a marriage for 48 years. And after she died, within some years, I met up with Amina. So, you know, this is why I'm saying I see great benefit in having a relationship with good women. But there's that kind of attitude. You see, if you're Jewish and you marry outside, it's like, you know, you're excommunicated. It's not all Jews. And there's Zulus who are like this. You know, Jews aren't just some strange species which the kind of anti-Semitism has created. Because you find this aspect where, you know, in some of the Scots nationalists or the Irish, the Zulus here, any of the groups around the country, they won't intermarry. But it brings me then to the first turning point in my life. Okay, and that is in 1946. I was going to read from Sharpeville, which is the final key turning point. The first is the one I'm going to read now. The second is my history teacher at King Edward's and what happens there. And then the third is Sharpeville, and how I then decide that existentialism, which is about individual freedom, is something that's too narrow. That if you want to stand up for humanity, you've got to be involved actively with others. And, you know, that's the Marxian approach. That's how I then developed into a Marxist. But this initial one, I'm 7 going 8. My grandmother is dying of cancer. She's been languishing in my bedroom in a small flat in the Oval. And my mother's devoted to her. And I'm farmed out to stay with relatives from time to time. I've got a sister, it's just the two of us, so she goes elsewhere. And my mother takes me downtown. So I get back into the geography of going to Rocky Street, the B2 tram, going through Hillbrow, and then down Elof Street, whatever. And we get off in Rissick Street. So if you can just give me a moment to find this. My pulse beat accelerates stroke after stroke through the water as I relive the horror that gave rise to my mother's words of wisdom that followed the incident. And I sense that I'm tapping that particular tadpole. It started on the day in 1946 when she took me for a trip to the movies in downtown Johannesburg, perhaps as a break from being stuck at home caring for Granny Clara. Fancy Art Deco cinema houses they were. We used the word bioscope in those days. Metro, 20th Century Fox, the Plaza, Empire, Coliseum, and His Majesty's. We would catch the B2 tram from Rocky Street. I'm just skipping a few descriptive things, and arriving at the Rissick Street post office. One moment I was anticipating the joy of a Hollywood film with ice cream. The next, all hell broke loose. My mother yanked my arm to get us out of the way of a bunch of cursing white hooligans furiously swinging punches at a man who was reeling under the blows. The man wore a smart jacket and slacks and a pair of fashionable black and white shoes. These I noticed before he sank into the gutter, blood streaming from his head. I remember the flash of a bronze knuckle duster striking his temple with a sickening crunch while kicks and blows thudded into his body. The thugs' faces were ugly and vicious, filled with primitive hate. White pedestrians scattered. I noted older boys from the Yeovil neighborhood, tough guys I looked up to, scurrying out of the way like rabbits. A smartly dressed woman shouted, "Stop! Stop! You're killing him!" And they jeered at her, Kaffir-loving bitch, as they slunk away after stamping the man's fine hat flat and kicking it into the gutter. What had this person done to merit such a beating? We heard a guy muttering, "That native ought to have got out of their way. He was taking up the pavement. This is a white man's town. That native boy must know his place. How dare he think he can become a white man by changing from animal skins into Western clothing?" By the time my mother and I turned the corner, I was sobbing, "Oh, Ma, let's go home. I don't want to go to the bio anymore." My mother must have persisted, probably to get both her mind and mine off the nightmare, and we went anyway. I think the movie was Road to Rio, featuring Bob Hope and Bing Crosby with the Andrews sisters, so it appealed to us both. So, a couple of things. From that incident, I'm aware of what had happened, the Holocaust in Europe under the Nazis, because we'd seen this even as 5 and 6 and 7 year old kids. We'd go up to the local bug house, to the Saturday matinee for kids, cartoons, and movies, cowboys and so on. But the idiots, see, I'm not the only one, would leave the movie tone news on, bringing the world to the world, and in it you would see these pictures of the war, the goose-stepping Nazis, and by about 1945, 46, the concentration camps and the inmates. We also would hear, in that period of my growing up, the relatives, the parents, talking in hushed whispers, which of course the kids would catch, about what's happening. So you had this knowledge, you had this imagery. And I said to my mother, after a week, which was a very restless week for me, not sleeping well, for the first time peeing in my bed one night and so on, disturbed. And they were trying to counsel me. And I said to her, "Is the way that man was being treated the way us Jews were treated in Nazi Germany?" And this lovely woman, who left school to go and work when she was 16, she thought, I can see her face to this day, his eyes looking, and she was searching for the words. She had to choose the correct words for this 7-year-old. And she said, "Well, Ronald, it's not quite like that, because you already know what was happening to the Jews in Europe, the concentration camps, the death camps, and the gas chambers." So we don't have that in South Africa, but it starts like that when people get beaten up because of the color of their skin or their religion. And if nothing is done to stop it, it just gets worse and worse. which is why we must be kind to people, we must respect people. And then, of course, I told you already about, you know, what Judaism is, etc., etc. And that was the first real turning point in my life. And it gave me an empathy with whatever the color, but in the first place, obviously, for the black people you saw who were so poor and were being mistreated, even in the yokel streets, even in my relatives' kitchens, the neighbors' kitchens. Yeah. My parents were fortunately kinder and respected people. And that's where you write a book like this with a memory like that. Yes, it's a therapeutic aspect for me, but I'm wanting to give people insights, and you can make of it what you will, but I expect that it imparts a contribution to humanizing us. And for a reader, this is what a memoir should do. You might not be Jewish. It's a minority. But whatever you are, to be able to put yourself in a person's shoes or in that neighborhood and so on, and think yourselves about your own lives, and hopefully a good memoir can impart something to civilize, to create greater understanding, and so on.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.